A tradition truly unlike any other. The coaches at the annual meeting this year in Orlando. Everything has been compressed.
Looking good. Not as meeting. Compressed on that top row there. There's some people missing. No. A little extra shoulder room than years past, it seems like.
Absolutely. Like, I'm surprised the photographer didn't say, can we move it in? But see, if you move it in there, then it gets a little sparse over there. And the point is, like, this thing used to be a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And the coach's photo would come out during the week. Now, we don't even get to dinner on Sunday, and here's the coach's photo. Like, they've really hit the accelerator on this thing. They want to get everything done and get the hell out of there. But some of the guys didn't even show up. Now, they're all lined up in front. You got the Harbaugh brothers together again. You got Andy Reid in shorts and his Tommy Bahama shirt, as per usual. We got some new faces there for the first time. But missing, and thank you, whoever compiled this list, Nick Sirianni, Mike McCarthy, Matt Eberflus, Mike Tomlin, Sean Payton, not photoed in the group.
I mean, they're there, right? They're at the owners' meeting. I'm sure they're just like, they said the hell with this picture, right? I mean, I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're playing golf. Maybe they just said, hey, I got other things to do. I got another meeting, whatever. But, yeah, they said the hell with the picture on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that's the thing. It would be interesting to know what the explanation is. Is it, I choose not to be photographed?
Yeah.
Is it, I didn't get in until after they took the thing? They usually take it on Monday. What are you doing? Like, why is this a Sunday thing all of a sudden? I think this is the first year the photo has ever emerged on the Sunday of the annual meetings. So maybe there's a legitimate excuse, or maybe you have five head coaches who decide, one or more, or collectively, to give the photograph process the middle finger, which would be great. If you're going to do that, just show up and give the middle finger for the photo. I'd rather you do that. Instead of figuratively giving the middle finger to the entire process, just show up and, you know, give the middle finger. Just scratch your forehead at the right time.
Yeah. That'll go over well. We wouldn't talk about that or anything. But you know, I don't know.
Good.
We see every year, like, two guys miss pictures or not there, right? It does seem more than normal with five not attending this picture. Also, too, what I'm always intrigued by, right, is just who gets dibs on the front and center seat, right? In years past, we had Andy Reid and Belichick right there, right? I understand Andy Reid, right? He deserves to be there. He should be front and center. But I always look at the other guys there and go, oh, that's a bold move there, sitting up front and center. Jim Harbaugh, wow. First year back in the league, going, I'll take the center seat, no problem.
I guarantee you he got there early. He showed up with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind, was standing in line at the velvet rope by the photograph area. He was getting the midpoint. He was going to be the fulcrum of the front row. Not Andy Reid, not my brother. I'm getting that spot because I'm back. I'm the man. Hey, Andy, get your big leg out of my way. I'm coming for you this fall. That's the message he's sending with that smile.
I guess so. I don't feel like he's that kind of guy to plan that out like that. But, you know, nonetheless, him and his brother.
Plans out everything.
I know.
He plans out everything.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't seem one to worry about attention or stuff like this a whole lot. Maybe he did, though. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, though. But Andy looking smooth as always in one of his Hawaiian shirts there. You know, you can never, I mean, owner's meeting, anytime Andy's outside of the actual facility, it's always, you're always going to see one of these type of shirts on Andy Reid.
As we pan through that front row, you have, from time to time, the Conor McGregor, who the fook is that guy reaction as we get used to some of these new coaches like Brian Callahan, there he is. Some people are going to be like, who's he? Dave Canales to his right,
right.
The Panthers coach, obviously. Callahan, the Titans coach, and I only knew who he was immediately because we interviewed him at the scouting combine. I might have been Conor McGregor-ish.
Dennis Allen was last year's, like, everybody, who the hell is that guy in the picture, right? So there he is, wearing the hat, too. Bold move, right? I don't know. Is he the only guy wearing a hat in the picture? I think he is.
I think he might be.
Yeah, that's a rare one.
I have a theory, too.
What?
I have another theory, an alternative theory. Oh, you got Jonathan Gannon sockless. I have an alternative theory on why Jim Harbaugh sat down. Because if you stand up, you got some big mofos in the back row that you might not measure up to, like Dan Campbell, like Kevin O'Connell. Like, if you're going to stand, you like Brian Daboll, he probably was the last one there and missed a seat, because I'm not standing next to these guys. These guys are giants. Look how big those guys are. Look at Dan Campbell. D'Amico Ryan's sneaky, sneaky huge. You know, a lot of big guys, Gerard Mayo back there. I mean, it takes Zach Taylor. I got to give you that. I got to give you the round of applause for standing next to Dan Campbell. Nobody wants to stand next to Dan Campbell.
Because football players don't think like that. See, that's a common man thought, and I don't mean that to be disrespectful. But when you get numb to that when you're like you've been in a locker room or played football like a Jim Harbaugh. That's where it is. It can be different, right? I mean, again, I learned pretty early on in life, like, whoa, there's people out there that are big, and I'm never going to be that big. And look at that guy. He's way bigger than my dad. I thought my dad could beat anybody up. Right. But you do get a little numb to that, right, where, you know, you don't worry about it as much. Hey, depends on the locker room. I go to the Equinox. Yeah, I'm one of the biggest, strongest guys around. You know, you bring me to an NFL facility, I'm the wimpiest guy around. It just depends where you are. And, you know, that's where I think the NFL guy has become numb to that to a degree.
I wonder if any of them are on their toes.
Yeah, right?
I think any of them are on their toes.
I know, right? I'd like to know, too. I hope it would be
Can't
Shanahan.
Tell. So oh,
I
there we go.
Zooming
in. Zooming in. Can't see. Can see the footwear, but can't see the back row.
McDermott wearing some cool sneaks. Looks like he's got some Jordans on there, something like that, or something cool with the suit. McVay's always dressed to a T. Look at that, like perfectly khakis with the loafers and the perfect collared shirt. And he's done some muscles, right? LaFleur's next to him going, man, my muscles aren't as big as McVay's.
Guns out. Yeah, I know, but my shirt's tighter.
Yeah, LaFleur's trying to like flex a little just so he doesn't look too much smaller than McVay sitting there.
You know, it's funny. You talk about football players getting together and they're all different sizes and shapes. And that's one of the things that's great about football. It really is a cross-section of the human body.
It is, no doubt.
Everything.
Right.
Short, tall, thin,
yep.
Thick, muscular, just country strong, like all sorts of guys. But back when my son was in high school and we had sideline passes for that great Baylor-West Virginia game from 2012 when the final score, I think, was 92-87. And Geno Smith had a big game, and Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin. And we're standing down there on the sideline, and this is when my son is still, like, you know, he's growing, and he's 16 that year. Is that right? 16? Yeah, 16 that year, and biggest kid on his football team at high school, small Catholic school, but biggest kid on the team, you know, and thinking he's going to keep growing and being big. And, you know, it was, like, a little bit taller than me. We stand on that sideline, and I saw him, like, do that. Just to the guy next to him in, you know, full uniform. And it's like, yep, that's the moment you realize they grow them bigger than you in places other than North Central West Virginia. So that was his moment of forced
moment.
Humility.
Right. Yeah, hey, we all have that moment. We definitely do. You know, just that moment of, wow, you know, I thought I was big and strong. But here in this area, I'm not big and strong. I'm a weak link. I mean, it's funny depending where you are, those little things you have. My son Philip went through this, I think, like within the last 6-7 months, right? Where, you know, I think I've told you a little bit. He loves sports, loves football, loves baseball, likes basketball a lot, but this year decided not to play basketball. Right, he's in seventh grade, so I was like, okay, you know, hey, this day and age of, like, really most kids are, like, starting to focus in on one sport, right? I was like, all right, we'll take one out, you know. Basketball, he didn't want to do basketball, so he wants to go all in on baseball and football. He's good at both, so we'll see. But I asked him, and I was like, well, so why don't you want to do basketball anymore? He's like, you know, Dad, I mean, I'm not going to the NBA. I mean, I see those guys. They're so tall. I'm not going to the NBA. So that was kind of his funny rationale. Like he's so guaranteed to go to the NFL or Major League Baseball. That's no problem. But the NBA, you know, he saw a few of those guys, to my point, your come-to moment, being on a court or seeing them up close to go, whoa, I've seen my dad. I know my mom. She's Sicilian. I'm not going to be 6'8", and I can't jump through the roof there. So I'm not going to be a basketball player.
Well, to our point from last week when we did our draft of the all-time NFL starting five as basketball players,
right,
there have been over the years so many football players that would have loved to have been basketball players, but they just weren't freakishly tall. I mean, you're freakishly tall at 6'5", and you're short on a basketball
court. I'm a point guard. Right.
Short.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you just can't stretch your body any more than it's already stretched. Although Jim Harbaugh, back to him, he did will himself to like 6'2 or 6'3 by drinking a lot of milk. That was from a Real Sports profile years ago where he explained that he wanted to be over 6 feet tall, so he drank milk. He would drink the other kids' milk at school when they were done with their milk. Whole milk, too, not that candy-ass skim milk or 2%,
that's right,
as he said.
That good
I'm quoting
stuff.
Him. But he wanted to get north of 6 foot, and you got to go north of 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", to play in the NBA.
Yeah, pretty much. You do. That's where football has got a little bit more, like you said, the everyday. Hey, there's some giants, but there's a lot of guys in there that are 5'9", 5'8", 5'11", all of that. So there's a little more versatility in the size of the human beings, the makeup of the human being in the NFL.
That's what's amazing to me, that very rare, and I don't know that there's a short guy, that there's a sub-6-foot guy in the NBA right now because I just don't follow it like I used to. But that's what made Spud Webb at 5'7", Muggsy Bogues
right,
at 5'4". Muggsy Bogues running between people's legs at 5'4". Just amazing. And the just sheer courage that it takes to walk out there among these redwood trees, that you're just walking through a forest when you're 5'4 on a basketball court, and to have the skills to go out there and do what he did, that really was incredible when you think about it. That a guy 5'4" made it to the NBA.
Something. Yeah, you got to be incredible at something. He had. I don't think it was 5'4". I want to say 5'6". I think you're cheating him out of like
5'4" sounds better.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm building the legend. I'm building the legend.
5'6", the legend was built enough already, being at least a foot shorter than everybody out there. But yeah, like him and Spud Webb, their explosive ability, their change of direction, they're like third down running backs in the NFL. And then, of course, they could jump up there with, you know, guys that were 6'8", so special that way. But you better have something special if you're going to be, you know, shorter than you should be. What is it? How tall?
Well, this is from the Wake Forest official athletics website. He played at Wake Forest from 1983 to 1987. At 5'3", he became the shortest player in modern Division I basketball history.
Wow.
Tyrone Muggsy Bogues.
Wow.
5'3".
Whoa.
So I was giving him an inch. Now, it may be that they're carving off more, again, to build the legend, right? It's kind of like the high school, college football program dynamic where if it's good to add pounds and inches, they do.
Yeah.
If it's good to take pounds and inches away, they do. So I don't know that it's a real 5'3", but according to Wake Forest, it's 5'3".
I would think
it
is
5'4". I always heard 5'4".
I mean, I would think it is. They're certainly not, you know. I don't know. That's one you can't really lie about or BS about, and you know, it's one where I would think he'd want every inch possible. You're right. Like in a college, especially with football, everything's embellished, right? That's how it works in a like the height weight thing. I mean, always. In college, you look at a guy, they usually have everybody marked up about a half an inch to an inch, you know, probably a few pounds too many. They're not really there. It makes them look a little bigger, blah, blah, blah. And to that point, high school, college kids, all they're worried about is, oh, I got to get to the NFL. I got to get bigger. I got to get stronger. That's what everybody's been telling them. Mom and dad, you got to get bigger and get stronger. And then they get to the NFL and they go, man, everybody here is trying to lose weight and try to be as thin and as fast as possible. Holy cow, it's different than what I thought. And it's just, it's funny. I know that jumped out to me when I made my transition, just how aware guys were of their weight and not wanting to be too big, where it was totally the opposite at college or in high school.
I had a flashback just now to when my dad used to take me to high school football games when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And my original scouting report was very simple, very basic. You'd get that program that somebody typed up in their basement and mimeographed with the old machine, with the, you know, and you're looking at it and it's got all the players' height and weight. And I would determine who I thought was going to win the game based on which team had more guys who weighed 200 or more pounds. Because that was a rarity. That was a rarity. That was like spotting Sasquatch if you had guys that weighed 200 pounds back in the 70s playing high school football. Now it's probably 320, 330 is the, oh, wow, hey, they got some big guys on the team. But, yeah, if you had a 200-pounder or two, in my mind, you were more likely to win. Because that's basically grown-ass man when you're a kid in the 70s. If you're 200 pounds, you're ready to go out there and do some damage. Of course, not a lot of the 200-pounders ever played all that well. But that was my
your theory.
That was my attempt,
right,
to try to prognosticate, which may explain why I suck at it now. Okay, anything else from the weekend that was?
No, nothing else.
We've checked the box. We talked about the photograph, and so off we go. Did you watch any basketball?
Of course, yeah, I definitely did that. I mean, I had no choice. I mean, we in the Northeast, see, we've come to this point in our lives where on Saturday for about 7 months straight, it's going to rain like a monsoon like you've never seen before. I mean, I'm not joking. I know we went through a run, you knew, in the NFL season when you were coming up, where I think we went like
every Saturday.
Well, it's really kind of continued here the last 6 or 7 weeks again, where Saturday in the Northeast, you got to sit home and it's going to rain so hard that you just hope your basement doesn't flood, because it's 2-3 inches. It's not like, oh, it's just raining and it's a drizzle. It's like, I can't believe it's raining this hard for this long. There's rivers forming out of nowhere. There's lakes forming out of nowhere where I live. And I'm not embellishing at all. It's really like that. And I don't remember ever in a period of my life seeing so much rain in a short period of time ever as I've seen here in the last like 7 months.
And you want me to move there. You're not
right.
Doing a great job on behalf of right. The Chamber of Commerce to get me to move there.
Damn it.
By the way, we had a family right. gathering last night. My youngest nephew turned 17, which is just like I remember, like you can relate. Your daughter's 17,
yeah,
right? Is
right.
she 17 or
yeah.
16?
17. Yeah.
Like, I remember the night he was born. I remember everything about it. And it was 17 years ago, just like that. But my other nephew, who's in his early 30s, he said, stop trying to get me to move to Connecticut or he'll kneecap you, which is probably as high as he could reach on you. But you've been threatened by the West Virginia mob.
Okay. All right.
Trying to get me to move to Connecticut.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Well, I'll meet this guy one day and we'll see about that whole kneecap talk and we'll figure that out.
I'm still waiting for my pork roll, by the way. I hope my pork roll hasn't turned.
Damn.
By the time I finally get it. I think it's supposed to come today or tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'll
all
have
right,
the
good.
Full pork roll update later this week.
Good, good. I want to hear that. I definitely do. All of my Jersey friends can't wait to hear the update on your sandwich and how you like it.
I'm still debating whether or not to put cheese on it the first time. I really don't like cheese on bacon. I like cheese apart from on a bacon and egg sandwich, so I'll have to make that decision at the appropriate time. All right, we make the decision to move on to football, and we were talking about short guys. How about a short quarterback? Russell Wilson, Mike Tomlin, coach of the Steelers. And this is a great couple of days to fill the void between free agency and the draft, because there will be sound. There will be quotes from some of the coaches, general managers, and owners at the league meetings. Mike Tomlin had this to say about the quarterback position in Pittsburgh. This is from Sunday. We've been very transparent about the pecking order, at least to start. Russell Wilson is a veteran, man. He's got a proven process of readiness. He's been in this league for a long time. He's capable of rallying troops, receivers, tight ends, running backs, etc. He's just got a lot of experience in terms of what it takes to be the guy over the course of a 12-month calendar, and I just think that's something that a younger guy like Justin Fields could learn from. Rest assured, when it's time to compete, Justin will be given an opportunity to compete and will allow those guys to sort themselves out. He also said that Wilson basically is in the pole position. And look, I saw someone suggest last week, might have been Shefty, that someone in league circles told him that there's a set of facts where Russell Wilson isn't even on the team week one. I think that's a little far-fetched, because why would you move on from the guy who could be your backup for $1.2 million? That was always the risk in Russell Wilson only taking $1.21 million. Yeah, come on in, be the starter. Hey, Russ, sorry, the other guy's better. We think the other guy's doing better. And, oh, no, we're not going to trade you. We're not going to cut you. We got a backup quarterback with 13 years experience for $1.2 million. Are we crazy? You're going to be there ready to go. Everybody needs backup quarterbacks. You're our backup. And if you play better at some point, you'll be the starter. So that's part of the risk that he took when he signed up to play for the Steelers. And he may have gotten, you know, some wink nod promises that once it's time to go practice and play, who knows what's going
to
happen.
Well, yeah, he's going to have to earn it. We know that. I mean, Mike Tomlin, he might put out the red carpet a little bit here, but he's not going to roll it out there to just go, hey, you know, you got it no matter what, and don't worry about it no matter how things go here. That's just not the way things work in Pittsburgh anyways. But I think between everything they've shown us, the talk, the attitude, whatever else, right? That no, they're going into this. They want Russell Wilson to be their starting quarterback for all the reasons we discussed, right? I mean, you just heard Mike Tomlin there. He's proven. He's got a process, right? He's done things in the league. Again, it's our beacon of hope conversation we talk about. There hasn't been that there in Pittsburgh. They got it now with that type of guy, right? I don't think it makes any sense for what, you know, for the, oh, we're going to maybe cut Russell Wilson for Justin Fields. Listen, you and I, we know we both like Justin Fields. But at the same time, too, right, I don't know if definitely every locker room in the world is just going to get behind Justin Fields right now. We saw the league kind of deemed him as a backup quarterback. Nobody really wanted to take that chance, let alone, hey, guys, we're going to go into the season with Justin Fields, and we traded a six-rounder for him and all that. No, they're going to frame this around a guy and go, hey, this guy's in the Super Bowl twice. You know, a bad year for him is 27-9 last year. That's their, and people think he fell off earth, right? So that's how I feel like they're going to frame this around him. And yeah, Justin Fields, of course, he'll get a chance to compete. But I think, again, it's Russell's job to lose. I think that's maybe the phrase, the better way to say it. And I think that's kind of going to be the MO there in Pittsburgh.
I think what's going to have to happen is basically what happened 12 years ago in Seattle. When Matt Flynn was the guy, Russell Wilson comes in as the 75th overall pick in the draft. And for a while, the narrative was, wow, Pete Carroll was so brave to go with the rookie over the guy they gave a $10 million signing bonus to. No, the reality is everybody knew that Russell Wilson was better. It would have been brave / foolish to go with Flynn because everybody knew. It was obvious to everyone in the building that Russell Wilson was the better option. If something like that happens when it's time to go to St. Vincent College in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and they do their thing, and Justin Fields is making everybody say, holy crap, what were the Bears thinking?
Yeah, right.
What were the Bears doing?
Okay.
This guy's special. He's running past everyone. He's like, who knows? But you have to at least account for the possibility that he would be so much better than Russell Wilson that he wins the job by the time we get to week one.
Sure.
But my point is, even then, it would be stupid to cut Russell Wilson because Justin Fields could get hurt.
Right.
And then what do you have?
Exactly.
They don't even have a third quarterback right now.
No, that's where that makes no sense. Well, why would you cut Russell Wilson? He's played. You're paying him nothing. Right? I mean, you just said it right. It's Justin Fields. Until last year, that was the first time we were kind of like, ooh, okay, it looks like he's finally taking care of his body. He took a lot of big hits. So, yeah, that there's no way that happens. These guys are brought in by all due accounts as like, hey, Russell Wilson's got a chance to go, hey, I'm the man, and be the man there for a few years, or it doesn't work out, and they're going to pivot and go, okay, let's see if Justin Fields can be the man if it didn't work out for Russell Wilson after this year or whatever. But, you know, I think by everything we've seen, heard from Pittsburgh, things I know, they plan on going on into this year right now, framing it around Russell Wilson's their starter. He's their guy. And, yeah, if Justin Fields goes out there and tears it up and takes it from them, then that's okay. Then they're okay with that. But they're going in right now framing this as our leader, our commander, Russell Wilson. He's won a Super Bowl. Let's get behind that, and let's be the best version of the 2024 Steelers we can be. And it, you know, I like it. I like the moves. It's aggressive.
Oh, I think it's the smart way to posture it, and then we just see what happens. But look at it this way. Where did Justin Fields want to go when he looked at all the depth charts?
Right.
All the QB1s out there.
Yeah.
Where did he want to go because he thought that was his best chance to get on the field. Now, he might be thinking about 2025, but that still implies at some level that he thinks Russell Wilson isn't going to play so well this year that the Steelers want to keep him next year. And they leaked right after they traded for Justin Fields. They leaked this idea that they intend to have conversations about a longer-term contract after the season. Well, when we get after the season, we'll all have an idea as to who the guy should be. Certain things reveal themselves the passage of time and the playing of games.
Right.
We won't need to go out on a limb once you get through 2024. That's why, of all the dumb things the Broncos did in the trading for, paying of, and use of Russell Wilson, the dumbest by far, Chris, was paying him that contract without seeing him play a single game. Because you anointed him for 2 years, you put yourself in a spot where if it's a disaster, you're going to have an $85 million dead cap charge over a two-year period because you gave him that deal without knowing that he would be a fit for your organization. And the Steelers have the perfect way to just try it out, thanks to the Broncos' mistake, because the Broncos are paying $39 million less $1.21 million. The only way that Pittsburgh was going to be a positive beyond what he was already due to make was if they paid him more than $39 million this year. So this is perfect opportunity for Pittsburgh. And this, again, is why I was leery about, when you look at the landscape, where does Russell Wilson go? He better be damn confident he's going to be the starter because he becomes a valuable backup, bargain basement backup. Look at what backups are signing for. Trubisky, $2.75 million with upside in Buffalo. Mason Rudolph can make up to $3.6 million. And then you got Russell Wilson, who's won a Super Bowl, who was on track for Canton before the past couple of years at 1.21. If your QB2 ends up blowing him away in camp in the preseason, you got a hell of a backup for $1.2 million.
Yeah. Listen, I think that both those guys, Fields and of course, Russell Wilson, I think they went to the best possible spots they could find. You know, again, and Russell Wilson wasn't going to be handed the keys like he is right now to Pittsburgh anywhere else. No, I mean, everybody else was like, eh, I don't know if I want to deal with that. Oh, you can come here and compete against Daniel Jones with him probably being the leader, the guy in the leader house there, and then you got to take it away from him. So this was option, you know, or best option for Russell Wilson and for Justin Fields at the end of the day. I'm sure he had a good feel, too, and why wanting to go here. One, because you explained it, right? I mean, it's a great situation. All right, it's Russell Wilson, and it's been a little wobbly there. I can maybe, you know, outperform him or take over, or we'll see where it goes. But nonetheless, I would think Justin Fields had a good feel here for Pittsburgh and that he had some allies in that building, whether they reached out to his agent or whatever, that they have people there that believe in him. Right. So where he is going to go, okay, I'm not going to be the starter or whatever, but I want to go somewhere where I know they got some belief in me and what I could be going forward. And I think that's the play Justin Fields made, and I give him credit for that. I think that's probably the best play for the situation he's in, rather than going to a place where, hey, the team might be crappy. I don't know if I got anybody that really likes me here or really believes in what I do. Oh, I do get a chance to play. Oh, we're not very good. The coaches aren't very good. They're not proven, whatever. And now we're all going, I don't know, is Justin Fields still a starting quarterback or a quarterback in the NFL? So that's where I do like the move for Justin Fields. I think there's a lot more positives than negatives, that's for sure.
It just is impressive that the Steelers were able to find that sweet
spot.
It is,
right?
They could say what they needed to say to Russell Wilson to get him to be a volunteer, not a hostage.
Right.
And then say what they have to say to Justin Fields to get him to want to be there and to make it all kind of hold together. And they both are buying into this idea that one of them's going to play and one of them's going to be on the sideline. And they're both accepting their fate. Now, for Fields, it's more like, okay, I'll concede it for now, but maybe I won't concede anything. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do my thing and I'll let the coaches decide. And Russell Wilson, see, I just think that after the past 2 years, what's he going to do? Is he going to make a power play? I can't imagine, after being around Mike Tomlin, and being part of the Steelers culture for the next 3, 4, 5 months, if we get to late August and it's apparent that Justin Fields is the better option, is Russell Wilson going to pout? Is he going to demand a trade? Or is he going to say, let's forge? Is he going to say, here we go?
Yeah.
He's all in for this year with the Pittsburgh Steelers no matter what. So I doubt that there's going to be any type of pushback from Russell Wilson.
100.
If fair and square,
right,
they decide Justin Fields is better.
You brought this up when we had Baker Mayfield and him leaving Cleveland, right, and all that. And not that it's totally similar here, but it's similar in this aspect of, like, Russell Wilson's at a point of his career where he's got to be careful. He's got to be the good soldier. He has a reputation about him. People, you know, there's going to be people in the league that don't want to deal with him. And like Sean Payton said, kissing the babies, and he's worried about this, and he's got an office in the building, and his team is here, and he's got everything like that. So that's where he can't afford, you know, too many missteps here or any another blow to his NFL reputation. And we know he's a really nice guy and a human being, but these are the things that I'm speaking about that you know, I know. That's kind of how he's perceived around the NFL. So that's where I think he'd have to be, you know, to your point in that scenario, he'd have to be on his best behavior there because, he's definitely dancing on a line there of where it could go, major negativity on Russell Wilson in the NFL circle.
And to his credit, through all the crap that was going on last year, regardless of which side you're on,
yeah,
whether the Broncos were within their rights to approach him about delaying the vesting date of his 2025 guaranteed salary in the amount of $37 million, whether it was wrong, they've thrown around the word extortion. I mean, come on, let's not be melodramatic about this. The Broncos trying to act in their own best interest, but wherever you land on that, Russell Wilson never breathed a word of it until he got benched. Until he got benched late in the season. Now, some might disagree with how he handled it then and how his PR machine handled it then, but for weeks, it wasn't a peep. It wasn't a sound. So I think that he understands he does need to watch what he says and does. He needs to be perceived as a guy who's going to be all in for team because at the end of the day, this season ends and he's got nothing for 2025.
Right.
There's no
That's what I mean.
Guaranteed money
right.
that somebody else is going to pay him. He's got to be in a position where someone will deem him as an attractive option for 2025. Everything he does this year is going to be scrutinized by whoever would want him next year. Is it better if he's playing and playing well? Yes. But if it ends up that Justin Fields is viewed as the objectively better option and the powers that be in Pittsburgh make that affirmative decision to put him on the field, Russell Wilson needs to think about how everyone will view his reaction to it.
Exactly.
And what impact it'll have on him next year. Of course, the problem is, it's like, is he going to hang around and just be a backup? Is he going to do the Joe Flacco thing? Is he going to just, the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, apparently, just take the backup check for as long as possible, even if he knows there's no path to playing? I don't know if Russell Wilson's going to do that, but this year determines what he's going to be next year. Is he going to be backup guy next year, or is he going to be starter somewhere next year?
Yeah, that's where we've gotten to.
Hinges on what happens this year.
You're right. We've gotten to that point. You're definitely right about that. This year, it is hinged on his future, whether he will be, you know, continuing to be a starter in the NFL, or he's going to be relegated to backup. And even, you know, Mike, I think if he got relegated to backup, I feel like he hangs around for a little bit. You know, maybe not into his 40s, but I think he's still going to be like, wait, I think I could still play. I still got the arm strength. I still move okay. But yeah, I don't know if I see it, you know, happening for a long, long time. But it'd be interesting. Big year for Russell Wilson, no doubt about that.
Hey, you know what else is riding on what happens this year and beyond?
What?
Whether or not he gets a bronze bust in Canton. That's riding on it.
Definitely.
Because, you know, Kurt Warner had that spectacular run. When he burned at his brightest, he was better than Russell Wilson by far. 1999, 2000, 2001. Then starts to dip in 2002. And whether that was a Mike March thing, who knows? Injuries, who knows? They liked Mark Bulger. Bulger ends up supplanting Warner. Warner goes to New York, starts Eli Manning's rookie year. Was 5-4 when he got benched, but then just kind of faded into semi-oblivion, resurfaces with the Cardinals, back up to Matt Leinart. Ken Whisenhunt started using Warner whenever they fall behind by 7 or 10 points, and then they tie it up and they go back to Leinart, and then that fell apart. And then next thing you know, they're in the Super Bowl. And that cemented Warner's Hall of Fame bust. And my point is, now, I know Russell Wilson has a whole decade in Seattle of high-end performances, but this is either a donut hole or it's a dramatic turn and a drop-off. And if it's a drop-off, it's going to make it harder for him to get to Ken. If it ends up that the past 2 years were a donut hole, he'll get in. And what he does this year is the first big step. And whether or not the last 2 years were the aberration or the new normal.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, his legacy has taken a hit. I don't think we can, you know, anybody can deny that. I don't think he would deny that as far as legacy is concerned. I'm sure he's not all that concerned with it right now, and he's just focusing on this year. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the great start to the career, right? But, okay, when the Legion of Boom left and all that, they, you know, never could get back to a championship game. You know, he wants to go somewhere and kind of tells everybody in his inner circle and people that trust him, I'm going to go somewhere and, you know, the team be all about me and I carry the team. That failed in a big way, really, right? Showed that's just not who he is, especially at this point of his career. So, yeah, he needs a resurgence here, something to remind us all about the player he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and especially early in his career when they were going to the Super Bowl. Because right now, yeah, I don't think you're going to say Russell Wilson's a Hall of Fame quarterback right now. No way. I don't think that's happening.
I mentioned that the Steelers only have two quarterbacks on the roster for now. They'll undoubtedly add at least another one, probably two more before they go to training camp. You need enough arms there to distribute all the passes and the individual drills, the 7-on-7s, and the full-blown workouts. The Raiders have two top quarterbacks now. I don't know if there's anyone else lurking on the roster there. I don't have it in front of me, but it's Aiden O'Connell, who started a lot of games last year after Jimmy Garoppolo was injured a couple of different times, and then they just kind of forgot about Jimmy G. Now you've got Gardner Minshew, who has signed on for a decent veteran quarterback contract. Antonio Pierce, the new coach of the Raiders. On O'Connell, this comes courtesy of Steve Weish of NFL Media. At the end of the day, listen, Aiden O'Connell played his ass off. He did a hell of a job for us. You're talking about a kid who has that mental toughness to play in the National Football League. Whatever happens and whatever we do, it has to go through Aiden O'Connell. Being honest with you, because he's earned that right. That is a turn for Antonio Pierce, who just a few weeks ago was making it clear that he doesn't want a Band-Aid solution at quarterback. He wants a long-term guy. He wants a rookie. And it may be that somebody pulled him aside and said, hey, Antonio, there's a nuance to this. There's a subtlety to this. The draft is a competitive process. And if we make it too clear what we're trying to do with pick number 13, I believe, in round one, makes it harder to do it. If the whole world knows we're looking for a quarterback, somebody's going to jump us at 13, or it's going to cost a lot to move up if there's a guy we want. So let's just be prepared to be flexible here. Let's not wear our heart on our sleeve. And, you know, maybe let's affirmatively create a little smoke here that it's Aiden O'Connell who has a chance to compete. And we got Gardner Minshew. And, you know, if they get that long-term guy, so be it. If they don't, they go forward with these two and they let them compete and see what's what. So I think that part of this, Chris, is a correction to what we heard in Indy when I thought maybe he was a little too candid in what their plan is moving forward at quarterback, because he made it clear they want a long-term guy. And it became, I think, also clear from the context, they're talking about a rookie, not somebody they would sign in free agency. And yeah, obviously they didn't go after a long-term guy in free agency in Gardner Minshew. He could earn that right, but that wasn't what they were looking for.
They, I mean, all the things you said, they got to be careful about how they play this, because, you know, I would think, of course, quarterback would be on their radar as far as the draft is concerned. And they're sitting there in a spot right now where it's like, ooh, I don't know. I mean, the J.J. McCarthy's, the Bo Nix, you know, the Michael Penix, you know, what's going to happen there in that area? That's definitely a sensitive or, you know, like trouble spot we look at to go, ooh, there could be some action there. The Vikings at 11, the Raiders at 13, people making moves, whatever else. So, yeah, they got to hold their cards close to their vest as far as that's concerned. And then I also think part of this, Mike, is like a little bit of like just coaches speak. It's a little coach speak. Right, he realizes Aiden O'Connell did a good job. People respect Aiden O'Connell in the locker room. He can't just sit here and go somebody else is the starter, especially not Gardner Minshew. Now, the reality is like they paid Gardner Minshew $15 million guaranteed. Like Gardner Minshew's, if no quarterback is drafted, Gardner Minshew's going to be the favored guy as the quarterback there for the Raiders. Right, they might let Aiden O'Connell have the first few reps at OTAs, whatever, but it's going to be close. So, again, I think that's where this is one where a little bit like, hey, wait, this guy did good things. We respect him. He did good. You know, the locker room likes him, certainly. Ooh, we gave Gardner Minshew money, and people are already saying he will start over Aiden O'Connell if we don't draft anyone. And I think he's putting the brakes on that a little bit to just show Aiden O'Connell the respect that he deserves to go, no, it's not guaranteed that way. But by my history in the NFL and the contract of Gardner Minshew, that tells me he has an edge on Aiden O'Connell right now, no matter what Antonio Pierce says.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I still think they're eyeballing a quarterback in round one.
Right.
But there's only so many to go around, and there's more teams that want quarterbacks than there are high-end quarterbacks in this year's draft. So that's going to be part of the fun as it all plays out. By the way, Anthony Brown also is on roster at the quarterback position. Minshew almost willed the Colts to the playoffs last year. 7-6 was his record as a starter, taking most of the reps after Anthony Richardson, all the reps after Anthony Richardson got hurt, and he played a little bit before that. Richardson had a concussion early in the year. Minshew played some. Richardson came back, had the shoulder injury. It was him the rest of the way. And I feel like he just deserves a real chance. Like, we saw him early in his career in Jacksonville with a bad team, frankly, a team that was disintegrating from the 2017 high water mark when they almost got to the Super Bowl. It fell quickly for the Jaguars. And it was 2019, it was 2020, and by then they were so bad they got the first overall pick. There goes Gardner Minshew. And, you know, I just never understood, like, what was it, like a sixth-round pick that they got for him when they traded him to the Eagles? You know, I just feel like this is a guy who would benefit from the opportunity to be the guy. Full offseason, full training camp, preseason, regular season, see what he can do. Tough draw in the AFC West.
Yeah.
But they may have something with Minshew, and maybe that's part of what they've decided as well. You know what? We don't need to mortgage the future to try to get one of these young quarterbacks.
I think that's
maybe
what protects
like what we have in Minshew.
Right. Yeah. I think it protects that. It doesn't make them as desperate to go, okay, yeah, like you're saying, we got to give up the farm to get a quarterback. I think they can go, we got two guys we feel like we can win games with. So I think there is an aspect to that. And you're right about Gardner Minshew. He's right on the fringe there. Unfortunately, he's one of those guys where he could play. He's tough. You know, he's got some moxie. He can make all the throws. But there's certainly a few throws every game where I know during the season last year I told you where you go, you'd like your starting quarterback to make that throw. And the problem with Gardner Minshew is that, yes, you know, hey, he's got some starting quarterback qualities like we're talking about, but when you put him on a practice field next to a guy like Anthony Richardson or Trevor Lawrence, it becomes like very apparent very quickly where everybody goes, whoa, we like Gardner, but he's not Trevor Lawrence. Anthony Richardson's got, you know, 7 rockets up his butt and a rocket launcher for an arm. Gardner Minshew, we like him. We like him a lot. But that guy's potential is here and Gardner's here. Like, so that's the problem with Gardner, right? And when you got a guy that's young and talented there, you just go, well, we know he's not the future. This guy is. And, you know, hopefully for him, he can find a spot where he can hunker down and be the guy for an organization.
Hey, and who knows? Maybe Antonio Pierce was playing four-dimensional chess when he said what he said 4 weeks ago in order to get Gardner Minshew for a better deal than what they otherwise would have gotten him for. Because if it would have been clear that they were desperate to go out and sign a free agent, maybe it would have been more expensive to get Gardner Minshew. They came out of it with not a horrible deal for Gardner Minshew to come in and be the guy. That $15 million probably isn't fully guaranteed at signing, but still, it's a good deal for him. It's a really good deal for him. And maybe it does tell us more than anything Antonio Pierce could say about how they view these quarterbacks, because O'Connell's in the second year of a slotted rookie deal. And, yeah, Minshew got a good, not spectacular, but a good contract to come in and presumably be the guy. So maybe they won't even be in the quarterback market when the draft begins 1 month from today. It's 1 month till the draft. We need the countdown clock, which will be right over there. Did I finally get it right?
I think you might have got it right. First time ever.
It will be right down there once we have the countdown clock. It is in 1 month, unless they move it around. They tend to move it around from time to time. Not the draft, the countdown clock. All right. Boy, counting down to the allotted time for the first segment. We hit it right on the nose. Didn't go over, didn't go under. We're going to take a break. When we return, will the Commanders and or the Patriots trade down? We'll discuss what they said and what they might have meant on that topic next here on this Monday edition of PFT Live.